Coming up on this episode of The Social Hour, a delayed Grammy show angers tweeters. LinkedIn is buying Reportive, what you can expect from a social media salary, and Instagram goes lux. All that and the Golden Voice on The Social Hour.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for The Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 47, recorded Monday, February 13th, 2012. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 15% off your new account for 6 months, go to squarespace.com and use offer code SOCIALHOUR2. And by Hover.com. Hover is domain name registration and management that's simple. Upgrade to a premium domain and trade in your old clunkers. Visit Hover.com/SOCIALHOUR. Hey, everybody. Welcome to The Social Hour, episode 47. Thanks for joining us from Twit World Headquarters in Petaluma, California at The Brick House. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, at the Canadian Twit headquarters, which is a little bit smaller than your headquarters down there, Sarah.
Well, it's a proud headquarters, the headquarters of the North. So
it's very proud, yeah. Very small and proud,
small and proud. But how you doing, Amber?
I'm doing great. Can't complain. It's been it seems like the weeks are just flying by, Sarah. So I can't believe it's almost the middle of February.
I know.
I find it hard to believe, but yes, things are good.
Good. Glad to hear it. I'm looking forward to Valentine's Day tomorrow. I know that some of the people watching The Social Hour probably like Valentine's Day. Maybe the majority don't. Valentine's Day tends to be that holiday that is really only fun in certain situations. Otherwise, you just hate it. But that's gonna be fun for me.
Do you have big plans, Sarah?
Nothing crazy. The mister and I are going to have a nice sushi dinner at a restaurant that we've been meaning to go to for a while. And yeah, just kind of one of those
nice things.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Nothing crazy.
But
last night actually was also a pretty big night, at least in the world of social media and people who like music, because it was the Grammy Awards last night. Of course, these are the awards that go out to various artists and various genres of music. I assume that you've heard of the Grammys, but just in case you haven't, you get Album of the Year and Country Music Song of the Year and that sort of stuff. Pretty big event. And what was interesting, I thought, about the Grammys this year, that is the way that the Grammys does it every single year, but is that the West Coast is on a tape delay. Now, the reason that the Grammys do this, as I understand it, is they want primetime ratings. And when you're on a Sunday and the show starts at what would be 5 o'clock West Coast time, because it would be showing at primetime East Coast time. By the way, the show is shot in Los Angeles, so it's live at 5 o'clock Pacific time, West Coast time. Is that, on the East Coast, then you've got a nice prime time, 8 o'clock. People are done with their weekends. They're back from the mountains or skiing or whatever they're doing. And they want to have the same advertising prospects as far as ratings go on the West Coast. So they tape delay it. The weird thing is that the red carpet is live on both coasts on, network television. So you watch the red carpet. And then the West Coast goes and does something else for 3 hours, 3.5 hours, while the East Coast watches the show. Now, that has always been sort of annoying, because if you're on the West Coast, you know that you're seeing something that already happened. You could call somebody in Boston or something and say, who won? But now with social media, and particularly Twitter, the whole thing is just, it's an absolute mess. Because I had to just stop reading Twitter because I didn't, I wanted to maintain some semblance of surprise. And even if I would just look at it a couple times, even to play along with the people on the West Coast who are watching it on the same delay I was, it was peppered with my friends in all other places. So I knew most of the big awards that happened well before they happened. So I don't know, Amber. I mean, did you watch the Grammys? Because you would have been on the special East Coast time and gotten everything live. So it probably doesn't matter so much to you.
I watched a little bit of the beginning of the Grammys, and then like I do with any live show where I think, I'm going to sit down and watch this. About half an hour in, I get kind of bored, and then I start to jump on social media sites to see what everybody is saying. And I think that's a pretty typical response from people like us who spend a lot of time on Twitter and Facebook. And I think it's frustrating for people who live on the West Coast. I saw a lot of people complaining about that. I guess I would argue, I only saw the beginning of the show, that there were a few performances that I thought were great. And so with this type of show, unlike the Oscars, I think at least, you know, if you have to wait to watch the show, even if you know who won, at least you have those performances, right? Unlike the Oscars, which is actually kind of a boring award show, really, compared to this, I think.
Yeah, less spectacle, less crazy outfits, that sort of thing. It's interesting because you have all these people saying, why are you tape delaying the show? And on one hand, it's like, they've always done this. As far as I can remember, because I've always watched the Grammys, even though I'm with you, I for the most part, I think it's pretty boring. And half of those performances, I'm not even interested in anyway. But as far as the people who put on the Grammys, it's like, well, I mean, I guess if you wanted to take social media into account, I'm talking about Twitter primarily as far as breaking news, but it could be on pretty much anywhere. You could look it up online. If they still get the money that they need to get from these advertising dollars, because it's still a pretty old system, the way that advertisers buy into event shows like this, they really don't have an incentive to change anything unless somebody could prove that ratings were down because people like me just got all of our answers on Twitter before the show started. Thing was, ratings were up last night. They were up quite a bit, right? Yeah. Let me see if I can get of course, my internet barely works because I take, because I'm plugged into this guy.
But, I'm telling you, it always happens.
The show was up 45% versus a year ago. 25.2 ratings for 38 share versus 17.4 from last year. And that the highest local rating in at least 22 years. Now, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to jump in. I bet you were about to say the same thing. I'm assuming that the increase in ratings is because of Whitney Houston's unfortunate death on Saturday.
Yes.
And so many people wanting to tune in to see what people were going to be saying and how they're going to pay tribute to her. So that must have given the show a massive boost, because that's what I mean, everybody was talking about that all day long yesterday. I mean, everybody's still talking it on TV and in social media sites as well. So that must have encouraged a ton of people to tune into the broadcast.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I don't know if I want to say I'm waiting in anticipation to see what they would do. But some friends and I who had gotten together to watch the show and have some pizza, you know, we all had a conversation beforehand, like, do they say something right off the bat? I mean, these sorts of shows are things that are planned in many, many months in advance. And they're, you know, by Saturday night, the show is pretty much locked down. Everybody's done the rehearsals. There's not a whole lot of wiggle room. But then again, you can't ignore an event like that. And it was certainly a big deal online. And of course, I'm trying to pull up this Mashable article that highlights how Twitter apparently was, you know, had broken the Whitney Houston news. Oh gosh, a good 23 minutes before you saw it on any news station. You know, that's local news, that's cable, that's everything. Both by, you know, a couple of small accounts. There was one account. I think he had about 14 followers at least at the time that he tweeted out that Whitney Houston had died. And then there was another that claimed that his aunt worked for Ms. Houston and found her. So those two tweets, I mean, those were fairly random tweets, you know, by people who did not have a huge Twitter reach. Now, whether or not those were retweeted enough to sort of start spreading online before, you know, someone like the Associated Press tweets out, I don't really know, because a lot of this stuff happens really quickly. But the fact remains that this is where people flock to news. I mean, I know that that's the first place I wanted to go to get all of my news, you know, rather than listening to a lot of speculative, you know, we're outside the home, that sort of stuff that you see on the news that I find pretty repetitive.
Oh, they just beat it to death. I mean, I think that's part of what happens with, I mean, at least with social media, what I love about something like this is that for breaking news, it's fantastic. Things spread really quickly, but then they kind of taper off too. I mean, I know people are still talking about Whitney Houston, but they're also talking about other important issues like what's happening in Syria and exactly. The list of things goes on and on. Whereas I find in broadcast television, they'll just milk this for so long, or mainstream media, I should say. And social media, we're like, okay, you know, let's move on a little bit. I think you're exactly right. It was, you know, all over Twitter. And then, you know, when you turn into TV, you see a bunch of reporters kind of standing outside talking about nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing of substance.
Exactly. So Whitney, for horrible reasons, I believe that gave the Grammys this year at least a ratings boost, certainly off of the top of the show. And the tape delay thing, hey, I don't see them changing anything next year. Maybe I'm naive. Maybe if people complain loudly enough, things will change. But it was interesting to see the rage that some people had. Like, why are they doing this to us? Well, they did this last year. Maybe you just weren't on Twitter yet.
Yeah, I don't think it's a big surprise, but, you know, it's fun. I find sometimes, I don't know if you find this, Sarah, with some of the live broadcast award shows or if they're reality television shows, that sometimes I'm finding more and more just junk on Twitter. You know, I just feel like I'm searching through a hashtag and all of a sudden I'm like, wow, there's so much, I guess, so many people contributing to the conversation, but there's just a lot of sort of spammy negative comments, more so than I remember, I guess. Maybe that was just my experience yesterday.
maybe so. I got some weird responses to a couple of things that I had tweeted yesterday too, and I'm not sure if people just, I don't know, it's a full moon last night or they're just riled up about stuff. But I've also been really liberal with my block button on Twitter. It's something that I used to really struggle with. It. You know, somebody would be kind of needling me, replying to things just to be negative and just to kind of get a reaction. And sometimes I would respond. But even when I didn't, I was always reading them. And after a while, it's just like, don't have time for this kind of thing.
Just block, yeah.
Yeah, just block. And even if you feel bad later and change your ways, it's like, it's just, I don't have the time because there's just too much going on Twitter to be like pelted with negativity on a regular basis. You know, if I see the same username a couple times, they just got to go.
That's actually a good tip, I think, for people. I do that often. If I get a negative comment from someone, I'll go in and I'll look at their Twitter stream and see that they're basically attacking and saying negative things to pretty much everybody else out there. So those are always the easiest people to block, right? You know, they just want your attention. It's best not to say anything, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Very true. Well, so it was a big night in social media last night. As Amber said, a lot of this is not life or death situations. Well, in the case of Whitney Houston, it certainly was. But in the case of the Grammys, a little bit of a tape delay isn't the end of the world. But still, interesting to see the different perspectives online. We have a few cool links as far as just kind of the way that shows, event-based shows like the Grammys, put a live show together and why they make the decisions they do versus a show like the Oscars, which is live everywhere. It just happens to be really early on the West Coast and more of that prime time like the Grammys had on the East Coast. So Grammys does things a little bit differently. So some interesting reading, food for thought. Quick reminder that if you want to find any of the links that we talk about that we say will be in our show notes, just go to twit.tv/TSH. That's where our show archives live and all the notes of all the stuff we touch on, the articles, people that we talk to, where to find them online, on all of our shows. And each episode also has a nice embedded video. So if you miss a show and you're on our page and you have time to watch it, just go ahead and click the play button and watch from there. But if you don't have time to do that, you don't necessarily have time to watch us live, which, by the way, is 11 a.m. Pacific on Mondays, 12:12 p.m. Eastern time, you can always subscribe to the show. That's a great, 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 great way to not have to worry about when we're shooting and did you miss anything, because those episodes will just show up in iTunes or however you want to subscribe. We have large video or small. Small is really good for mobile if you're watching on a mobile device. And we have an audio feed, too. So if you can't watch the show, but you want to hear everything that we're talking about, we've got that for you as well. We try to make it as easy as possible for you to watch the show And you can always email us with all of your questions and comments at thesocialhour@twit.tv. Amber, have you heard of a place called Squarespace?
I sure have, Sarah. I think I think your site's on Squarespace as well as many other websites, and I constantly recommend that people use Squarespace because it is so simple. There's no doubt that it's the fastest way to set up a website, especially if you have no coding or design skills as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Squarespace is a place where I always direct people when they want to put together a website. Maybe it's a blog. Maybe it's a photography site. Maybe it's a place to host your video podcast. Maybe you make knitted scarves and you want a place where you can show those off and maybe even give people links to buy it, that sort of thing. Squarespace is a place to put together a very professional looking website easily. So whether it's some sort of an online diary or a place to show off the stuff that you're making, or again, like I said, photography, Squarespace is very all-encompassing. It's not just a blogging platform. It's really a way to create a variety of different websites, and they look amazing. If you go to their examples page and you just start surfing around and seeing all of the different Squarespace websites that people have put together, you'll be really impressed. I mean, they're beautiful, and they don't have that, oh, this all looks the same because it's Squarespace look that sometimes you get with other blogging style platforms where you can kind of tell there's sort of a uniform aspect to it. You never even know it was Squarespace. It's really beautiful. They also have great little widgets. So if you're the kind of person like me who doesn't have time to blog regularly, but definitely updates her Twitter feed and her Flickr photos and that sort of stuff regularly, I have widgets plugged into my website. So my site, my Squarespace site, changes dynamically, even though I'm not going in and blogging all the time. So I feel good about that because I want to make sure that my site reflects where I'm the most active. They also have really good stats. Like their iPad app, their mobile access is awesome. I can delete comments and just kind of keep things clean on the go. I'm in my Squarespace iPad app all the time. In fact, I kind of prefer it, even though it's not necessarily where I want to blog the most often. But it's a great way to just kind of keep track of what's going on behind the scenes with Squarespace. So if you want to check it out, what I recommend you do is sign up for an account. You get 2 weeks to just play around. You can start a design. They've got some great templates to get you going. Just get yourself going and see if you like it. Now, at the end of those 2 weeks, if you're into it, if you like it, go to when you sign up at squarespace.com with the offer code socialhour2, that's the number 2, just socialhour2, all one word, you'll get 15% off your new account for 6 months. So that's a nice chunk of time there. 15% off of your account, and the tiers are really reasonable, but we thought that you might like this extra little special thing. And also, if you put together a Squarespace site or blog and you're proud of it, send us the link, because I'd love to show one of your sites off on one of our future shows of the Social Hour to get people a sense of what you can put together and, you know, get creative and keep us in the loop on that. So again, that's squarespace.com, offer code SOCIALHOUR2 for 15% off of your new account for 6 months after that 2-week free trial. And we thank them for sponsoring our little show here. All right, Amber. We had talked about a Gmail plugin called Reportive on this show way back.
A long time ago. Yeah,
it was a long time ago. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do remember it. It's a very cool plugin that you can add into Gmail so you can get information about individuals or contact information across multiple social media sites, recent tweets, that type of thing. It's a little bit like, I think we've talked before about Zobni, which I mm-hmm. believe is called Smarter. Very similar services, in fact.
Yeah, they're not exactly the same, but they are very similar. It's a way to, yeah, just a little bit of more of that smart contact type of a thing when you've got your Gmail open. I would show you right now, but my internet is completely kaput right now. But you can see in this All Things D articles chat, if you scroll down a little bit, over on the right-hand side, Liz Gaines has highlighted some of how Reportive helps you when you're in your Gmail, and this is only for Gmail, at least right now, so it's not going to be the perfect solution for everybody, but a lot of us use Gmail or at least have Gmail accounts. So if I'm Amber and I are emailing back and forth, there are a lot of services that Amber might be connected to that will pop up in this very helpful right-hand rail of our email conversation. Now, of course, I know Amber, and so I probably know how to find her in a lot of those places. But if you're the kind of person who's emailing back and forth to people all the time and you're trying to keep track of your contacts and where everybody is online, that kind of stuff is so important just to have hovering there. Where's this person? What's their Twitter account? Yes, they're on LinkedIn. Okay, all that good stuff. LinkedIn is acquiring Reportive. We don't know for how much, but in fact, LinkedIn has declined to comment, at least as of February 7th when this article was written. But I'm wondering, okay, well, if it's a Gmail plugin and it works really well in Gmail and LinkedIn is part of the services that they pull data from, what is LinkedIn going to do here?
Do you think maybe, and this is just one idea, because I've been reading a lot lately about LinkedIn apps, and there are about 10 or 12 LinkedIn apps within the LinkedIn ecosystem that are very useful, that allow you to kind of sync up with other services and information. And it seems like this is a big area of growth for LinkedIn. So I wonder maybe if this is kind of one of the custom sort of apps that they're going to make available that they're behind, that they would push out through their service. Because Sarah, I'm just guessing here, but most LinkedIn users, I think, probably don't go out and seek these type of plugins like we may, right? Yeah. And so all of a sudden, if LinkedIn puts them front and center and makes LinkedIn even more useful, then there's a lot of value in that for them. So it might just be part of that ecosystem. Like they have other things. I'm trying to think of some of the apps they have. I'll just do a little quick search here, but I could see it fitting in that area on LinkedIn.
Yeah, Reportive hasn't disclosed how many people are actually using it. I was actually using it for a while, and it's the sort of thing that you can toggle on and off because it's like a plugin for Gmail. And I've actually kept it off for a while. Once I moved over to Lion, and then I never really turned it back on. Not because it's not a great service, just because you can live without it. But a lot of people are using it. The CEO of Reportive was quoted as saying that users viewed more than 65 million contacts per month. That doesn't necessarily mean that there's 65 million people using the service, but that there's data that they can collect about viewing usage. So it seems like a great market. It seems like a good fit for LinkedIn in some capacity. And yeah, maybe the apps thing, there's something there.
Yeah.
Then again, LinkedIn is great for what it is, but I wouldn't say they've been doing a whole lot of innovation recently that I notice. And of course, with companies like this, especially when they're really big, and LinkedIn is the sort of thing that everyone's sort of on, but are they all engaged in LinkedIn on a regular basis? Probably not. This could help drive engagement.
Yeah, I mean, I think you see them too. They were behind, I don't know if they acquired this company, but it is a LinkedIn app, not within the LinkedIn ecosystem, but an app for the iPhone. I think I talked about it before, called Card Munch, where you can scan in information from a business card and then it automatically links that person in with their profile information. But that actually is a LinkedIn app. So even though I don't think they're really a leader in innovation, I feel like they're just taking baby steps, Sarah. You know, they're gradually trying to increase the amount of applications that they're offering and partnering with technology companies to slowly grow and grow and grow. So it's not as dramatic as we've seen from companies out there like Facebook, who, you know, big, bold, splashy headlines, but they're kind of inching their way along, which could be an exciting strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. Antonio in chat says he thinks a potential employer picked up his outdated resume from LinkedIn, needs to delete that profile. That's one of those things about LinkedIn is LinkedIn is great. I mean, that's where my resume is. I don't think I have a copy of it anywhere else anymore, because it's just such an easy way to show people what all your history is, what your strengths are, all the good stuff. But you really want to make sure that it's up to date, because that is a place that people search for. Even if you don't direct them there, it kind of just becomes, what is their LinkedIn history? Let's go see where they've been. So yes, you have to make sure that you're keeping
up to date,
up to speed on that as well.
All right. So speaking of keeping up to speed on your different skills, this might be handy for people out there who are interested in social media jobs. I know there's a lot of people who are vying for these positions. This is an infographic that I found on Read Write Web saying, how much are your social media skills worth? And it talks about 20 different markets out there and salary ranges for titles within these areas. So they look at different cities from New York to Phoenix, Arizona, and a couple dozen in between, and talk about the different social media roles like strategist, specialist, public relations, and then within the salary ranges. I think that this is where it gets most interesting for people who are wondering, how much should I be looking for in for a position in social media? If you're in New York, for example, and you're at the top of the field in social media marketing manager, they say makes between $73,000 and $116,000. Not a bad salary. Just some really, I think, information that we haven't really seen pulled together like this before.
Yeah, this is really interesting. Of course, it's not a huge surprise that New York City would be at the top of a pay scale for you know, a certain type of job. But, why is Phoenix so low, for example? Low as compared to New York. Mm. Not as if there's any less social media going on in these areas. That's the sort of thing that's almost weird to me about these, is it makes sense that in different places there are different pay scales. It's just sort of the way it's always been. But these sorts of jobs are so, on their surface, it's so like unrelated to where you live. I mean, you could be a social media marketing manager wherever and be really good at it and be pulling in New York money. It's some of this seems like, well, that's a kind of a bummer. I mean, if you're in Denver, Colorado, why do you have to be 17th if you're working with a New York firm? So it probably depends on, you know, where the
cost of living.
Yeah, the cost of living and where the company is based and that sort of thing. But also some of these job titles, I don't know the difference. I don't know the difference between an online community manager and a social media specialist, really. I mean, I guess that you'd think the online community manager would be more of a talking back and forth in forums and on Twitter accounts and maybe Facebook pages, but couldn't a social media specialist do that too?
I think that out of all of the titles, so there's six different titles in this report, copywriter, specialist, community manager, public relations brand manager, social media strategist, and social media marketing manager. I think the title of social media specialist is the most obscure and difficult to kind of define and differentiate from the others. Mm-hmm. I personally think if they got rid of that, the rest of them makes a lot more sense. However, I'd argue even for the entry-level job that they posted here, the blogger or social media copywriter, in some cities that salary is as low as $14,000 or $17,000. I don't think, for a really good blogger, that's a very good salary. So it's fairly low. So there, I'm sure there's a lot of crossover here, Sarah. But if you think about it, this is it's a brand new field, right? I think that's sort of the exciting part about it, is these jobs just never existed 10 years ago. So people are trying to navigate this space and put some numbers out there. So maybe, you know, a good range to try to get a grasp of what you may be worth.
Yeah.
And use some of these numbers. And if you need to show it to your boss at some point, pick some of the good numbers here and get rid of the others.
It's nice to know that, I mean, if this all goes to heck, pretty much all of us, all of you watching and listening, as well as Amber and I, are social media specialists. We're social media strategists. And we're online community managers.
All those. We should get triple salaries. Yeah. Oh, really?
This is easy. We do this for a living all day, every day. Yeah. It's like, how can a social media strategist make more than a social media specialist? If you're a specialist, aren't you also a strategist? Anyway. Yeah.
What if you're a specialist strategist?
Yeah.
That's for next show, people.
Strategist. Yeah.
Don't get us to go into that right now.
So, yeah, it is a new field. It's kind of fascinating. Some of the job titles seem pretty made up. But hey, they are jobs. People need people who are good at social media to do a lot of work in social media. So that's the good news about it. Job creation.
All right. So our social media spotlight, Sarah. So Sarah, I know you use Instagram. Do you use a lot of the different filters on Instagram, or do you, because some people post just kind of raw and don't take advantage of it that much. Are you using Path more? What's your sort of habit with some of these apps?
Yeah, I actually, okay, so Chad, I don't know if you have my over the shoulder shot on this show, but what I usually do instead of just taking a picture through Instagram is...
No one's talking to Sarah.
What I do, okay, I'll just explain it to you. What I do is I will take a picture with Camera Plus. I will run several filters through Camera Plus. I will save that. Camera Plus can only, well, actually it can go straight to Instagram, but I'll save it to my camera library. Mm-hmm. And then from my camera library, I will import it into Instagram. Sometimes I'll add another additional filter.
Ooh,
usually I
fancy.
Don't. Because I usually like it the way that it comes out of Camera Plus. But then I do have to crop it because it has to be square. And Camera Plus doesn't crop at all. So it's the original dimensions. And then I upload it with a caption and my Foursquare location. That's something that you can't actually add from Camera Plus to go directly into Instagram, which is why I have that sort of middleman step. Extremely cumbersome. It takes forever.
Very frustrating, I know. Well, with this app with Instagram, they've just released a couple of new things, including a new filter, which is called Lux. And many people are just praising this filter, saying it just helps to really increase the quality of your photos, and it basically enhances the contrast and makes the photos brighter and the more definition as far as the contrast within the pictures. I guess a big win for people who use Instagram. I go back and forth. I use Instagram, Sarah, and then I'll go a couple weeks without ever touching it. And this is because I change phones all the time. I don't know why, but anyway, that's a whole other show.
This is, unfortunately, you have to see my computer in the background. But if I just show you, like, well, it's kind of out of focus. I don't know if this is... if this is even going to work. Can you guys even see this? Well, I'll do my best. There you go. Thanks, Chad. If I were to take a picture right now, by the way, Instagram got a new interface in general. If I was to take a picture of something kind of dark and blah, the corner of this studio is not all that exciting. So there's my picture. And I say, yeah, okay, I want to use it. Now, what you used to not see, but you have now here, this is the Lux filter. It looks sort of like a little half moon with a sun around it. And when you... well, that's sort of a bad, yeah. I don't think you guys can tell, unfortunately, just the way that this camera is. Sorry about that. But that's where the feature now is. So Instagram, not Camera Plus, did just kind of get an overhaul of its design. But the Lux feature is very much going against the Clarity filter on Camera Plus. Amber, I don't know how familiar you are with Clarity, but it's sort of like a baked-in one-click HDR button that lightens up a lot of stuff. Doesn't make everything perfect. Doesn't work in all situations. There's a good example from a TechCrunch post of how Lux will clean up a fine photo. I mean, the photo on the left is really nice, but on the right, you go, oh, wow, you know, you see all sorts of details.
Looks there. That much more detailed. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's something to do with lightening up mid-tones, mm-hmm. I think, so that you get fewer shadows. There's sort of a before and after type of thing. It's from Elmore Square Park. So good work from the Instagram team. I know that a lot of people watching the show will say, yeah, great work. If they'd give us an Android app, and we could play around with it. I know that it's really frustrating because Instagram gets so much attention, but there's millions of people.
It's limited.
Who would use it, but they can't just because they are still iOS only. But it's a step in the right direction.
Sure is. Hey, Sarah, is there... I actually just switched to an Android phone. Mm-hmm. This is what I mean about switching phones all the time. It's just a really bad habit of mine. It's like, you know, I'm not dating anymore, but I always have different phones. So that's where I get the variety. So I'm on an Android phone right now. And I was wondering, is Path on Android? Is there an Android app for Path?
Yes.
Okay.
Path is
okay.
On Android. And in fact... When the whole debacle about Path went down, I mean, to sum it up in extremely general terms, the Path was copying user address book data to their servers in an attempt to make it easier for people to find people through the service and be able to add them to Moments and that sort of thing, but without explicitly telling people that they were doing so, which Path says was a mistake, but that it was already an opt-in feature on the Android app. It just wasn't in the iOS app yet. For whatever reason, the two apps didn't work exactly alike. But that's how I know for sure. Yeah, they have an Android app.
Okay.
Haven't used it. Cool. But yeah, it's alive and well. And I think they have a lot of users via their Android app.
Hey, Sarah, before we get in, I know we have some great emails from people. I thought it might be a good time to also include this. Just a quick comment from someone on Twitter, Cher Jones, who just wrote us and said she's watching the show right now, that she thinks a social media specialist may be like a social customer service rep.
Oh,
so,
okay.
More in the customer service field. Anyway, interesting to get that feedback. Always love getting feedback during the show.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes sense. That totally makes sense.
Yeah.
A social media specialist, you know, maybe along the lines of like a Comcast Cares Twitter account type of a thing.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah,
yeah.
That can make sense.
Yeah, because there's people are coming at you from all sorts of directions now. So just having a customer service phone number isn't enough anymore. Okay, so yeah, if any of you are specialists or strategists or anything in between, social media manager, and you can describe your job description to us, that would be really helpful too.
We can just in case we're ever out of work and we need to, you know, come up with a new LinkedIn resume and make up some title. That'd be pretty helpful, wouldn't it, Sarah?
Exactly. We got an email from Mike Tabbert, Mike_Tabbert on Twitter. He's from Houston. He says, I ran across an alternative to Apple's Find My Friends, and I thought I would share it with you. It's the website is mymobi.com. The app allows you to share your location for a set amount of time with whomever you wish. It also allows you to check into your location, which sends an email to your contact with a Google Maps link with your location. And lastly, what I think is the best feature is you can send an alert to somebody and it will send them a link to a Mobi map with your shared known and alert locations. Love the show. Keep up the good work. What's nice about this is that it's available for BlackBerry and Android phones as well as iOS. Find My Friends I find it really helpful when I want to know when MG is going to be home for dinner. But it's iOS only. And so it's the sort of thing where, again, sort of like Instagram, it's annoying to hear about from people who can't use the feature. And you might say, well, isn't this sort of how Google Latitude works? And it does seem to me to be pretty similar, although my Mobi seems to really focus on not so much, hey, see where your friends are, or find your friends wherever they are. It's more of a families keeping track of each other and being able to send, here's where I am, almost in, you know, even in a potential emergency situation, that sort of thing. So it's looks like a good solution. They were written up, I think last October when they went live by a variety of, you know, life hackers and that sort of thing. So it tends to be something that it's a good solution for people. If for whatever reason you don't like Google Latitude or you're just looking for something else and you're not on iOS, this could be a good call. It works on iOS as well, just also available for other operating systems.
Awesome. Well, yeah. Thank you very much, Mike.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, Sarah, so we have a next email. It's a long one, so I'm going to... first of all, it's from Belisa. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly.
I think she's written into us before. I think it's Belisa.
Okay. So here's our email. Your discussion last week got me thinking and wondering what it is about Pinterest that I like. I like it because it's beautiful and I don't have to think about using it. I can just go there and look. And if I want to pin something, it's easy, so I don't have to use my brain. And then she goes on to explain that her brain is tired. She uses it all the time and then she gets to go online. And Pinterest in some ways is kind of an escape. I'm sort of paraphrasing here as we go down. But she says it's better than that because when she's online, she has a way to find stuff again and to organize information. She doesn't always want to blog everything. So this way she can kind of go back and look at it. So if she found a good recipe, she can keep it there on a board, things that she wants to read, and the list goes on and on. And then she explains again that her brain hurts already. With Pinterest, she's saying that, again, it's all about saving stuff and keeping these boards. Household hints, for example, she has a board for her kitchen renovation, kind of a good idea, and stuff that she wants to store there and be able to find easily again. So she sums it up and says that it's very visual, an easy way for people to connect and over shared interests, and it makes it easy to save and share stuff without the hassle of looking it up again. And she loves that it's it came kind of out of the blue and got us all wondering what makes it so popular and how it's grown so quickly. Thanks for listening, she says.
Bealey said that is it sounds like it makes perfect sense. What she's explaining is, hey, I'm a busy person. I want to save things as easily as possible, and this is a great way for me to save it, and it's more visual than some of the other options. I mean, obviously you could say, well, Delicious is a great way to save a lot of things that you find online, or you
can't as pretty though.
Exactly. It's not even close. Or you could use something like Instapaper or Read It Later if you want to. I mean, I guess you could think of them as pinning articles that they're not going to go anywhere, but they're, again, not visual at all. These are links and titles, that sort of thing. Some people like that. Clearly, a lot of people like the Pinterest way. In fact, an article TechCrunch wrote on Saturday has some ridiculous stats for Pinterest. 10.4 million registered users, 9 million of those are monthly Facebook connected users. 2 million daily Facebook users that are logging on to Pinterest.
Wow,
that's according to Inside Network's app data tracking service. Keep in mind, this is still like an invite only.
I know.
Now it's not hard to get an invite because there's the more users you have, the easier it is for someone to say, oh yeah, I'll just go ahead and invite you. But this is a service that technically hasn't officially even launched to the public. That is crazy numbers.
Unbelievable.
97 of these people are women. Now, I don't know what that says about women. I guess we're visual people, or we just like the Pinterest model. The design works for us. But you've probably heard and seen online that Pinterest is, it's I think, even erroneously thought of as, oh, it's like a site for women. Not true at all. I mean, you can pin whatever you're interested in. But there's something that is appealing to women by a very, very large margin. Pinterest also, we should probably mention, we mentioned briefly the path debacle about the idea of not letting users know when their personal information is being stored somewhere. There was an article written last week by Josh Davis over at llsocial.com. The headline, Pinterest is quietly generating revenue by modifying user-submitted pins. Ooh, that sounds terrible. It's actually sort of, it's somewhat simple, and it's certainly legal. Let's say, Amber, that I had pinned a really cool pair of headphones from Amazon. And you were visiting my Pinterest, mm-hmm. my wall. And you were like, oh, that's pretty cool. I'm going to click through. And then you looked at the Amazon page and were like, gosh, these are great headphones. I'm going to go ahead and buy them. Well, unbeknownst to you, probably, unless you're paying a lot of attention, when I pin something to Pinterest with a site that could include an affiliate link, Amazon is a good example of that, but there are many, it will add its own. So if you were to buy those headphones through my link, Pinterest gets the affiliate revenue.
Ah, gotcha.
And okay. The more, an item costs online, the more revenue Pinterest is going to generate. Well, some people say, that's ridiculous. How can Pinterest do that without telling you? Well, at the same time, I could have posted those headphones on my own blog and you could have clicked through and I could have gotten the affiliate revenue if I was participating in something like that. LinkedIn. Pinterest Terms of Service also state explicitly this is something that they can do within their terms of service. And so it's sort of like, hey, you might not have realized it was going on, but it's certainly legal. It's allowable. And they use a service called, I think it's called SkimLink or something like that, that allows them to easily post affiliate links so that they're not going in and doing this all by hand.
So interesting.
Yeah. And that company says, hey, this is what we do. We do this for other companies as well. So it's interesting. Pinterest is like, it has just exploded so much that I think they're under a microscope now with people who want to figure out, what are they doing wrong? Pinterest, it's too big.
People just want to attack it.
Yeah, exactly.
If they're not trying to clone it, they're attacking it, which brings me to a Google Plus comment that we just got from Richard Nesberg, who tells us that there's a site called Manterist for men, and it focuses on man caves and waffle bots. I don't know if that's true, but there is Gentleman, which we talked about before on the show.
That's right. I think it's just, honestly, I don't think there's anything so groundbreaking about Pinterest. It's a great site. I'm still not using it regularly, but that's just I don't know. I don't have a good reason. It's just that people want to save their all the stuff that they're bombarded with. And if you've got a nice wall, especially if you're doing a lot of research about, redoing your living room or something, you know, or paint colors or all sorts of stuff that you don't want to look at a bunch of links. You need visual cues. It just makes sense. I don't think it's reinventing the wheel or anything, but it's a really good site at a really good time for people who are really busy.
Very cool. All right, Sarah. So it's time for our tweet of the week. And our tweet of the week is kind of a hybrid this time around. First up, I want to say that we have one tweet that's sort of embedded in another. And this is from Mayor Bloomberg, who says that they've officially declared February 13th to 17th, 2012 to be Social Media Week in New York City. And I just wanted to share this tweet because it actually brings about a larger story that it is Social Media Week around the world. So we should probably just bring this up quickly on the show. So in many cities around the world right now, including Toronto and San Francisco, where we are, people are having social media activities, and there's conferences and independent seminars that are taking place for the whole week. So I think they have at least a dozen cities where people are participating in this. So a big week for social media and lots going on. So if you live in one of these cities, it might not be too late to participate in one of these events.
Yes, absolutely. I know in San Francisco, a lot of the people in the social media space are hosting events and talks and panels, some parties. Social Media Week it's one of those things where you can participate as much as you want to. It's not just sort of one event somewhere. We can all participate, but it is officially Social Media Week in New York. That is fun. I think actually I'm going to go to a couple of talks later this week about Social Media Week. And the nice thing about it is that social media, as we all know on this show, it's like it encompasses so much.
So much, yeah.
So you can really, you could go to an event that's all about what is a social media strategist. Let's define that. You know, what does it mean in this day and age? That sort of thing. And then go to some sort of a meetup that's just a little bit more fun, and you just sort of meet people, have a drink with them, that sort of thing. So, yay, Social Media Week. It's perfect for us.
It's perfect. We're getting so much feedback on Twitter and Google Plus during the show. I'm sorry it's hard to keep up with everything, but I am reading lots of the different messages that have come across. So maybe we'll try to address some of them in a later show, including one recently, Sarah, that just came across from Sarah about the specialist versus strategist. She's kind of agreeing with what we say, saying that a specialist is very entry level, where a strategist is what you would get promoted into. So I think we're all on the same page with that one.
I just don't know why. I get that it's, I mean, there's a higher pay scale, so it's probably a promotion. But if you're a specialist, you'd think that you'd know a lot about strategy. Anyway. Yeah, keep those coming. You know, Amber, what we should do? We should definitely have, because we have our area of the show where we at least focus on two or three of our feedback emails or voicemails and sometimes tweets that we get. But it would be fun to just sort of check in with our Google Plus stream more often. I know that I don't always have a chance to be looking at that during the show because we're busy talking about this stuff. But if we had a designated, let's take 1 minute, you know, and read some stuff, that might actually be fun.
It might work, yeah, because I know there's even just on the Google Plus post that I put up, there's a bunch of feedbacks, including ideas for future shows, and it's always nice to include all of these. So we'll try to make an effort to talk about this a little bit more in a special little section, like what you're saying right now, or something like that. Sarah, you can think of a better title. What you're saying right now.
You are writing. We are reading. And go. Yes, so we'll do that. We're generating show ideas during the show. It's awesome.
We're almost 50, Sarah. I mean, we have to kind of keep evolving, right?
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Reinventing ourselves.
Our joints are aching.
Like Madonna, you know.
We need new, fresh social media manager blood to help us stay hip. I'm just kidding. We do want to hear from you, though. So whether it's on Google Plus, whether it's on Twitter, whether you email us, that's thesocialhour@twit.tv again, whether you leave us a voicemail, it's just a Google Voice number. So you don't have to worry about me saying, hello, what do you want? You just leave a voicemail with a question or comment, 2626 social, or you can record a video. You have all sorts of options. I mean, we love the more feedback, the better. So keep it coming. And thank you in advance. If you record a video, just upload it somewhere, YouTube, Vimeo, wherever, and then send us the link. That's the easiest way for us to roll it into the show. Okay, Amber, get ready for your rat or fad of the week. Mm-hmm. But first, I want to thank Hover.com for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Hover has two domain services. They have premium domains and they have what's known as clunker trade-ins. I'll explain premium domains first. Let's say you've got a little bit of money. You've got a great business idea. You need a perfect URL. URLs are very important. It's part of your branding. It's the way that people will access you, through the life of whatever your product or your company is. That's where a premium domain comes in handy. It's a URL that's either, kind of catchy word, that's shorter, not a lot of like hyphenated, complicated URLs that people won't remember. If you go to hover.com, you can see that there are stars next to what's known as a premium domain. Let's say Podcast Pals is just absolutely, the dream URL for whatever you're thinking. That's in there. Or Podcast Inc. That's actually a really good one. It's not very expensive. You can see over on the right-hand side that there are different pricing scales depending on what you want to buy. Now, you don't necessarily need a premium domain, but hey, It might be something that you can't work around. So Hover makes it really easy to see, okay, well, what's the general range for that sort of thing? They've got those domains available to you. Now, if you want to trade in a clunker domain, what does that mean? Let's say you have a domain that you've registered or you've renewed at Hover and you want to upgrade your domain. Hover will take those old domains back. Yes. And then they'll credit you everything that you spent on your clunker domain with Hover. The original registration fee, any renewal fees. I went through a period when I was buying up domains and then renewing them every year because I thought I was going to do something with them. And eventually I had to just admit to myself that I wasn't. So this is the clunker domain that would really come in handy. Like instead of just letting them fade away, I could get credit back with Hover to use on something else, like a premium domain. So it works really well. If you need a standard non-premium domain, you can go to hover.com/social hour and you'll get 10% off. How about that? And if you want to trade in a clunker, you can call a customer service number on their website or email them at help@hover.com. Of course, everybody's cases are a little bit different, so they've got customer service in place to help you with that. But again, hover.com/social hour, get that premium domain and get 10% off. Oh, I'm sorry. You can't get 10% off the premium domain. You get 10% off a standard non-premium domain, which is probably what most of you are interested in anyway. If you want a premium domain, you've already got a little bit of money saved aside for that. So 10% off, hover.com/social hour. And they've also just got a really great website and experience. You can buy domains and renew domains and manage domains in a lot of different places. We're well aware of your choices. Hover is just easy, simple, nice design, no frills.
Human.
It's very human. That's a good way to put it, Amber. Yes. So thanks to them for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour.
All right, Sarah. So our rad or fad for today, it's a kind of a long-winded intro to this particular one, but many people will remember Ted Williams, remember the voiceover artist who was homeless last year, I believe in Columbus, Ohio, who was discovered by a local broadcaster and went viral as far as his amazing voice that many people called the golden voice. Mm-hmm. And then it was kind of an up and down for a while. We didn't know, had he kind of fallen off the way and started drinking again or disappeared. And it's great to see that he has been brought back into the spotlight. Kraft is using them in this video campaign that has a really strong social angle online. And that might be a good time to roll the video to see what this is all about.
All right, let's do it.
Hi, I'm Ted Williams. Last year, I received a lot of love from people who really helped out. That's why this Valentine's Day, I'd like to do something a little different and give back the best way I know how. From February 12th through the 14th, do something extra special for that certain someone. Tell them you care by having me tell them for you. Tweet 140 characters straight from the heart. Tag it with Voice of Love, and I'll read the best ones out loud, like this. At Tweedledee 137, you are the toppings to my froyo. Just keep on being you. For every Voice of Love tweet that you send my way, Kraft will donate 100 boxes of mac and cheese. Up to 100,000 boxes to a cause very near and dear to my heart, Feeding America, a national hunger relief organization. So this Valentine's Day, don't be shy with your feelings. Log on to Twitter. I love you very much.
He has the best voice.
He is the best voice.
I don't know. He really does.
There's something about him, you know, I think because we all know the story of how he came back into the spotlight and, you know, had been sort of invisible for so many years and is getting this second chance. And I think this is totally rad, not just because I'm a huge fan of Ted Williams and want to see him do well, but also from a social media perspective, it's an interesting campaign. You know, we've seen stuff like this done before with the Old Spice guy where he was reading tweets, mm-hmm. but also the social good element, the fact that they're actually donating so much food back to help people who are hungry. The more companies do this, I think we'd all agree the better.
Absolutely. You really want to root for Ted.
You sure do, yeah.
He's talented. He's really had some bad luck, certainly down on his luck for a long time. And the fact that he just seems like he's got his tux and he's really happy up there and like he's really excited to be part of this. And this is something that I would love to participate in. Voice of Love. Yeah. Is that what it was?
Voice of Love. So, yeah. You know, again, his voice is just so amazing. If you could actually send a message to someone that you knew, and it's just a great little story. So I think it's pretty rad. I think definitely a cool integration on the social media side with a few different things.
Yes, I think it's totally rad. Not only because Ted's back, there's a cool project that you can participate in. And also the fact that food is being donated to people who need it. And Kraft macaroni and cheese is delicious. So.
Of course. And if anyone's wondering if they just heard me sneeze, yes, I sneezed.
She sneezed.
I tried to hide it, but I couldn't. So I'm just getting so excited about Radar. Maybe I do it during the segment a lot because I'm so excited and talking so quickly, Sarah, that it just comes out, the sneezing.
It's we've got, I think her name is Sarah Lyle. It's funny because whenever she writes us, I think, is that my name? No, that's a different name. But she never misses a sneeze. She's always recording your sneezes.
She is on the ball.
She is on the ball. But you give them so much material. So it's like,
I know. I'm a giver, Sarah. What can I say?
You don't even have to try that hard. I don't know what it is. You're just allergic to social media. So you better get over it if you ever want to, you know, go up to, what was it?
Strategist.
Strategist or social
I wanna move
media
up.
Marketing manager. That's the top good. Tier. And then move to New York City, and then you're good to go.
Good.
All right. Well, I think we're at the end of our hour. Oh, don't be sad. We'll be back next week. Same time, same place. We're live on Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. That's kind of the best way to watch our show. If you can, we love to have you watching live, participating in chat, tweeting back to us, and all other sorts of ways that you can get back to us. But remember that if you can't, you can just go to twit.tv/TSH, catch up on old episodes, find anything that we talked about in the show. All of our links will be there, as well as handy-dandy subscribe links as well.
And we're pre-recording, Sarah, if anyone wants to tune in on Friday afternoon. We're pre-recording the show. I think it's this Friday.
Is that Friday? Let's look. You're right, because next Monday is President's Day. Mm. Gosh, that really crept up on me. Okay, yeah. We are pre-recording on, I think it is 3:30 p.m.
Eastern, yeah.
Is it Eastern?
Yes, I think, and you're at 12:30 Eastern because we moved it up an hour.
Okay.
I think so.
Okay. I will double check with Eileen just to make sure that that's right.
Eileen knows all.
Yeah, she does. Cool. All right. Well, I can do either one. So whatever works for you, whatever makes sense for us is good. Yeah. So we'll say 12:30 p.m. Pacific, 3:30 p.m. Eastern. Actually, that is right, Amber, because if it was 3:30 my time, it would be really late for you. That's not right. Okay, well, yes.
That's not right.
Join us on Friday. And if you can't, again, twit.tv/TSH is the place to go to keep up with us. For now, I'm Sarah in Petaluma. Thanks so much for watching.
And I'm Amber in Toronto. See you soon.
Bye-bye, everybody.